This week, we explore the mystical quest of Freemasonry. Is Freemasonry just a set of plays teaching morals through allegories? How deep does the onion go? In a wonderful essay published on universalfreemasonry.org, the author takes us through their thought process on the mystical quest of Freemasonry, what we're looking for, and where it can be found. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 587. I'd like to thank the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. You all have been assisting with the production of this podcast, which allows us to continue to bring the program to millions of interested people and current Masons and those of other schools of similar discipline from around the world for over 10 years, all without a backlog, all without an archive of episodes only available to a certain few, all episodes all the time, always available for anyone. And that's all thanks to you. In addition, we continue to strive for greater things as we improve the quality of the podcast, bring on new and exciting guests, and take on awesome projects that benefit everyone, all through your support. So I want to thank you once more. If you're curious on how to be a part of this, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various options. I also have a shop where you can find limited edition items, like our producer's pin, or various handmade leather goods that I do myself, or you can get autographed copies of the various books that I've either written or edited or been a part of. All of those are available in the shop. We've also got a bookstore available through Amazon links. And if you're more inclined on the leather stuff, I just would say check out the website Skull and Crown Limited. It's going to be in the More tab on our website, WCYpodcast.com. And those are orders through just my leatherworking hobby business where I'm handcrafting leather goods for y'all. So it's really cool, a lot of fun, a lot of satisfaction creating and working with my hands and crafting things for my brothers. So that's that. Now, let's talk about a couple exciting things that are coming up here very shortly. Number one, we have the Illinois Lodge of Research's Traveling Symposium, which is going to be happening on April 15th. Just around the corner, tickets are free. And you'll get to see three presenters. It's not going to be all day. So if you're somebody who loves all day education, well, this will give you a taste. If you're somebody who just wants a day of education, then you can come out and this will hopefully scratch that itch. We'll be working from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. It'll be myself, Brother Greg Knotts, and Brother Darren A. Laners, all doing presentations, talking, networking, bringing guys together, and really sharing some great fellowship this day under the Illinois Lodge of Research. And then, of course, we're being hosted by the wonderful Valley of Danville, Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite, part of the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction located in Danville, Illinois. This building is iconic and really classic. And because of that, the whole day, you don't even have to be a Mason to attend this event. Bring your friends who are curious for our Scottish Rite brothers. This does qualify as a Pathfinder event. For the profane, you can just come and check out the lectures and get a tour of the building. And for our current Master Masons, tours and lectures, networking, fellowship, all of this great stuff in one day, 9 to 3. It's going to be awesome, April 15th. Later in April is the Midwest Conference of Masonic Education, MCME 1949.org, multi-day, the 28th, 29th, and the 30th. All day happening in Canton Masonic Temple, Canton, Ohio. I'll be there. I am not presenting. I'm going to be a part of the day. I'm looking forward to listening and learning from my brothers. And also, I'll probably have a table or something where I'll be selling some swag or books or whatever the case is. But we're there to really just hang out, share fellowship, and learn from each other. And that's what's going on next month. So I hope to see you guys somewhere out there. The piece I wanted to read for you this week actually was just published 3 days ago. It was called The Mystical Quest of Freemasonry. It is attributed to Anonymous, One of the reasons that it caught my eye was that the artwork for the piece is actually something that has been often used on the forefront of the novel Thus Spoke Zarathustra by the prolific Friedrich Nietzsche. And those of you who attended my lecture on Nietzsche and Masonry and his idea of the Übermensch, Friedrich Nietzsche, of course, not a Mason. However, he did consider the closest person anyone ever got to becoming the Übermensch, the Overman, was Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. And so he was a Mason. And this was just kind of interesting. But that's what caught my eye on this essay. And I wanted to read the essay for you. So let's check out this piece, The Mystical Quest of Freemasonry, by Anonymous, published March 23rd, 2023, on universalfreemasonry.org. The archetype of the mystical quest is one seared into the collective consciousness of humanity. Why is this so, and what can the legends of Freemasonry reveal of its deeper symbolism? By the general agreement of Masonic students today, the history of speculative Freemasonry is considered to commence with the formation of the London Grand Lodge on the 24th of June, 1717. But as an introduction to the subject of my paper this evening, I wish to emphasize that although this data is accepted because it marks the beginning of an organized plan for the development of what is now the English Masonic Constitution, it must not be overlooked that the transition of the craft from operative to speculative was a gradual process taking place both before and after inauguration of the Grand Lodge. At the beginning of the 18th century, Masonic lodges in England, Scotland, and Ireland were composed of operatives as well as speculative. And notwithstanding the fact that by this time, the greater number were undoubtedly speculative Freemasons, the operative element was by no means eliminated. This was the period when the craft of Masonry was transformed, and the final result was the emergence in the year 1723 of speculative Freemasonry, proclaiming itself a system of morality presented in the form of a ritual, and veiling its instruction by recourse to allegory and symbolism. The precise circumstances under which the transformation took place have not yet been revealed, but we do know that the real founders of the speculative rite remained in obscurity and occupied themselves with only the general execution of the design of the system which they had inspired. Hence, it is that the structure of the ritual and the instruction lectures, as we have them today, was the responsibility of the executive of the London Grand Lodge, who worked in accordance with principles outlined to them by the masterminds who directed without actually participating in the verbal composition. A close study of the historical setting prior to the emergence of the speculative order will disclose to the student that the original founders saw with clear vision and foresight that the operative craft guilds had outlived their sphere of usefulness as a trade organization, but that at the same time they were capable of placing a ready-made machinery complete with an elementary symbolism on which to graft matters of highly esoteric and mystical nature. It was with this end in view that they arranged for non-operatives to be admitted into the trade guild, and then they gradually blended with the symbolism derived from the operative art of Masonry, a higher symbolism which served to veil an arcane science and philosophy. I have deemed it advisable to draw your attention to these facts in a paper of this nature in order to illustrate that emblematic Freemasonry incorporates doctrine and symbolism divided into two distinct classes. One, ethical and moral, derived from the operative craft and the technical equipment of a workman in material stone. Two, mystical and philosophical, transmitted from less public organizations of mystics and occultists, and having no relation to the practical building trades. The wisdom of the incorporated system lies in the recognition that both classes of symbolism and instruction have one characteristic in common. They both refer to man, his nature, his destiny, and the course he must follow in order to fulfill that nature and attain his true destiny. Freemasonry therefore acknowledges, as the writer, Pope, expressed it in his celebrated essays, that, quote, the proper study of mankind is man, And we find this same principle set forth in the third degree, in the instruction to the candidate to, quote, guide his reflections to that most interesting of all human studies, the knowledge of himself, end quote. All thinking men will freely admit that some form of self-knowledge is a necessary preliminary to self-mastery. And it is also abundantly proved that he who would be a master among men must, indeed, know himself and know of the powers which reside within himself. Further, he must know the truth concerning his relationship with his fellow men and all nature. The system we know as craft masonry was especially designed to teach self-knowledge, but this involves a knowledge much deeper, vaster, and more difficult than is popularly conceived. And therefore, before the individual Freemason is in a position to reduce its implications into personal experience, he must have the ability to understand the meanings of all that has been communicated to him, veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. As a contribution to the interpretation of Masonic doctrine, I will now proceed with the subject of this paper. And I first of all wish you to note carefully one thing that emerges clearly in the Master Mason degree. This is an emblematic quest for the recovery of what are cryptically described as the genuine secrets. In the title of my paper, I have termed this quest mystical, because great significance is attached to a full comprehension of what is intended by the cryptic ritual phrase, to seek for that which is lost. I must now ask you to consecrate your attention for a few moments on the ceremonies of opening and closing the lodge in the third degree. You will recall that in the case of the ceremony of opening the lodge, the whole intent is fixed upon the loss of genuine secrets and the method of their recovery. And it is shown in the ritual catechism that so great the zeal of those who are presumed to be engaged in the search for them, that they have covered the symbolical distance between cosmic east and west in order to participate. Now, by way of contrast, we find that in the ceremony of closing the lodge, the symbolical journey is reversed. Being now from west to east, it is declared that the genuine secrets have not been found. Further, certain substitute secrets having been regularly communicated, it is decreed that the fulfillment of the quest must be delayed until time or circumstances shall restore the genuine ones. From this is quite clear that the intention is to show that in the Master Mason degree, the measures of possibility have been spanned, and that henceforth the fulfillment or recovery rests with Providence, watching within the veil of futurity. In what light do Freemasons regard the contents of these two brief ceremonies of opening and closing the lodge? It may surprise some of you who have listened in lodge on many occasions to the recitation of the ritual catechism to learn that it is a modern version of what is known in mysticism as the quest formula, and thus is the reflection of a highly mystical doctrine. Its correspondence in mysticism is, in fact, the age-old theosophical doctrine concerning the eternal east of the antenatal life, which is forfeited by the descent of the soul into generation, as on a journey to the west, or into manifested being in the grave of the flesh. The way of resurrection from the grave is proclaimed to be that of return whence we came. The quest formula, in exceedingly old in folklore, and the presence of the doctrine incorporated in the ritual of the third degree, throws a flood of light upon that which is presently heavily veiled in allegory in the ceremony of raising. It also provides the key to that obscure passage in the ritual when the attention of the candidate is directed to a quote-unquote retrospect of those degrees in Freemasonry through which he has already passed. Let us reflect a little upon these things and express them in a language with which, as Freemasons, we are all familiar. We have been taught that our admission into Freemasonry was an emblematical representation of the entrance of all men upon this, their mortal existence. What bearing has this on the problem of self-knowledge? Surely we may quickly grasp that it is an emphatic answer to that deep, persistent questioning which presents itself to every thinking mind, whence come I? The answer is luminous in ritual terms. Each of us, we are told, has come from the mystical East, the eternal source of all light and life, and our life here is described as being spent in the West, that is, in a world which is the antipodes of our original home. Hence, every candidate, upon admission, is placed in a state of darkness in the west of the lodge. Thereby, he is repeating symbolically the incident of his actual birth into this world, which he entered as a blind and helpless babe, and through which, in his early years, not knowing whither he was going, after many stumbling and irregular steps, after many tribulations and adversities incident to human life, he may at length ascend, chastened by experience, to larger life in the eternal East. The instruction lectures also illustrate this in order to amplify the ceremony of admission. And thus, in the first section of the first lecture, the question is asked, quote, "As a Freemason, whence came you?" The answer coming from the apprentice, for example, from the natural man of undeveloped knowledge, is from the West, since he supposes that his life has originated in this world. But in the Master Mason degree, first section of the third lecture, the question is put, "As a Master Mason, whence came you?" And the answer is that he came from the East. For by this time, the Freemason is deemed to have so enlarged his knowledge as to realize that the primal source of life is not in this world, that existence on this planet is but a transitory journey spent in search of the genuine secrets, the ultimate realities of life, and that he must return from this temporary world of substituted secrets to that East from which he originally came. I trust that it is now possible for you to glean that in its highest understanding, the doctrine of Freemasonry tells us that the soul of man comes forth from an eternal center, and that the soul, in fine, goes back, or to that point within a circle from which the Master Mason cannot err. It is in this sense that as Master Masons, we are intended to realize that the pageant of the third degree is our own story told in another manner of language, and shouted forth in other types. We are also pursuing the search for that which is lost, and we have been raised in the shadow, that we may be brought thereafter into a great light, at once a morning star and orient which visits us from on high. This is indeed the message of the sublime degree, and it is again truly recorded in the introduction to the third degree lecture that to a perfect knowledge of this degree few attain, but it is an infallible truth that he who gains by merit those marks of preeminence and distinction which this degree affords receives a reward, which amply compensates for all his attention and assiduity. Thus, we are reminded that these few are those who lift their eyes to the morning star, whose rising brings peace and salvation, and a great inward light to all who sit in the darkness and in the shadow of death. It now remains for me to show that the key to the whole purpose of the Masonic system is contained in the central legend of the traditional history of the third degree, and that it is this key which is missing in the majority of cases when brethren have sought to elucidate the mystery. To many members of our order, the story of the building of the temple at Jerusalem appears to be the history of an actual structure of stone and mortar erected by a famous Hebrew king, assisted in the work by another king who supplied the men and materials, and by a principal architect who supplied the preordained plans to the craftsmen. But we must be very careful before we come to any such conclusions regarding this temple. And we must also bear in mind that the Masonic legend informs us that during the course of the work of erection, a conspiracy arose among the workmen resulting in the murder of the principal architect, and preventing the completion of the building, which therefore remains unfinished to this day. I will ask you to note that this legend cannot refer to any historical building erected in the old metropolis of Palestine, for if we refer to the volume of sacred law as an authority for the temple at Jerusalem, we find it recorded that the temple was completed. Moreover, the account given in the volume of sacred law makes no reference whatsoever to the conspiracy among the workmen, but on the contrary, it expressly stated that in the second book of Chronicles, chapter 4, verse 11, "Then Huram finished the work that he was to make for King Solomon for the house of God." And we are further informed that the temple was finished and completed in every particular. The Masonic legend further instructs us that by the death of the principal architect, quote unquote, the genuine secrets of a Master Mason were lost. Now it is obvious that the principles of architecture, the genuine secrets of the building trade, are not and never have been lost. They are thoroughly well known, and it is absurd to suppose that masons of any kind are waiting for a time or circumstances to restore any lost knowledge as to the manner in which temporal buildings ought to be constructed. Clearly, our duty is to pierce the veil of allegory contained in the legend, and by so doing grasp the significance of its true purport. That which is lost in to be found, we are told, with the center. But if we inquire in the language of ritual, what is a center? We are confronted with the enigmatic answer that it is, quote-unquote, a point within a circle from which every part of the circumference is equidistant. But what circle and what circumference? For we can obtain no clue to this in the construction of ordinary buildings. If we ask also, why with the center, we are again faced with a perplexing answer. Quote unquote, because that is a point from which a master mason cannot err. The truth is that these questions and answers are typically examples of an intentional puzzle language, which is used to stimulate investigation into the deeper things which lie beyond the literal words. The method is one that is common to all systems of initiation, and the clue to its adoption in our system will be found by a reference to the lecture on the tracing board of the first degree, where it is affirmed that philosophers, unwilling to expose their mysteries to vulgar eyes, concealed their tenets and principles of polity and philosophy under the hieroglyphic figures. The traditional history of the third degree constitutes such a hieroglyphical figure. From what I have already disclosed in this paper, it follows that the legend of the third degree deals with something quite distinct from the construction of a material edifice. And I need only add that the temple of speculative Freemasonry is that holy temple of which all material edifices are built, but the types and symbols. It is that temple of the collective body of humanity referred to by St. Paul in the first book of Corinthians, chapter 3, verse 16, in the words, "Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you, and of which he also declared, according to the grace of God which is given unto me, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon." 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10. A perfect humanity was the great temple which, in the counsels of the Most High, was intended to be reared in the mystical holy city, the city of eternal peace, of which the local Jerusalem was the type. The three master builders, King Solomon and the two Hirams, are a triad corresponding to the trinities to be found in all great world religions. It is hardly necessary to remark that the builders of this temple of the Most High were not three human personages, and we should realize that their names are a personification of the divine creative energy, considered in its three constituent principles, which are symbolized in our ritual as pillars of his work, namely wisdom, strength, and beauty. Those of you who are versed in metaphysics will recognize that these three metaphysical principles form the basis of all created things and may be defined for our purpose of study in more modern terms. 1. Wisdom, life essence, otherwise the breath of life. Strength, primordial substance, or that which translated from the Hebrew in the volume of sacred law as dust of the ground, into which the Lord, or life, God, breathed the breath of life. It is therefore a mold or vehicle of the life essence, and is termed in our modern nomenclature the soul, which gives form or objectiveness. Note, the actual passage in the volume of sacred law concerning this is in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, quote unquote, "And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." Lastly, beauty, the intellectual principle which is built into the soul and which energizes and binds the life essence and the substance together and constitutes the whole an intelligent instrument. It was of these three principles, or in the words of our ritual, of these divine attributes, that the human soul was originally and divinely built, and thus the temple of the collective soul in humanity was made, or built, of the three constituent principles of deity in due balance and proportion, perfect in all its parts. See Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. "So God created man in his own image. and the work was divinely pronounced to be very good. Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. The material of the mystical temple at Jerusalem was therefore the souls of men, who were at once the living stones, the fellow craftsmen and the collaborators with the divine purpose. But in the course of the construction of this ideal temple, something happened that wrecked the scheme and delayed the fulfillment indefinitely. If you will consult the book of Genesis in the volume of Sacred Law, you will find the same subject related in the allegory of Adam and Eve. They were intended, as you are aware, for perfection and happiness, but the project of the Creator became nullified by the disobedience to certain conditions which were imposed upon them. You will observe that their offense was precisely the same as that committed by our own Masonic conspirators. They had been forbidden to eat of the tree of knowledge, or in Masonic language, they were under obligation not to attempt to extort the secrets of a superior degree to which they had not attained. In our Masonic system, the ruffians are represented as demanding the secrets of a master, or the secrets of his exalted degree, and they attempt to extort them by violence. The meaning of this becomes clear once it is understood that the translation of the Hebrew word Hiram is teacher of supreme knowledge, or more correctly, it is the equivalent of the Sanskrit word Kura, meaning literally teacher or teacher of the divine wisdom. The fellow crafts are therefore represented as endeavoring to obtain that knowledge which Hiram said was known to but three in the world, or in other words, knowledge that was known only in the councils of the divine Trinity, and the attempt resulted, as you know from our legend, is the death of the master. This tragedy, however, is not intended to be the record of any vulgar, brutal murder of the individual man. It is a parable of a universal loss and an allegorical expression of that which resulted in consequence of a defect in the collective or group soul of the human race. In this parable, we are dealing with the moral disaster to universal humanity. For those significant words, Hiram is slain, refer to the fact that owing to all that is signified by the fall of man, the faculty of enlightened wisdom has been cut off from humanity. It is in this sense that the temple of human nature still remains unfinished, and it will do so until we recover the plans and designs which were formerly regularly supplied by the grand architect of the universe. In our own day, we have good reason to know that despite all efforts and endeavors, we are still unable to regulate the disorders of individual and national life, and this indicates to us that some heavy calamity has befallen us as a race. It is also true that in our best moments, we all long for that light and wisdom which have become lost to us. And like the craftsman in search of the body, we go our different ways in search of what is lost. We seek it in pleasure and work and in varied occupations and diversions. We seek it in intellectual pursuits and in Freemasonry. And those who search farthest and deepest are those who become most conscious of the loss and who are compelled to cry out for assistance. Thus, the search goes on. And in the divine providence, we find that there still remains to us the glimmering ray in the east for our darkness. We still have our 5 points of fellowship, our 5 senses, and our rational faculties to work with, and these provide us with these substituted secrets that must distinguish us before we regain the genuine ones. In this manner, veiled in allegory, Freemasonry teaches us the great truth that is humanity itself. That is, the living temple, whose building in those far-off days became obstructed, and therefore to all of us, who have eyes to see and ears to hear, it conveys the emphatic message that we are both the craftsmen and the building materials of that edifice which was intended to be an unparalleled structure, but which, although in foundation, well and truly laid, has so far failed in the effort to raise a superstructure perfect in all its parts and honorable to the builder. But let us not forget that while Freemasonry emphasizes the utter confusion arising from the universal loss of the original plans and designs, its real purpose is to bear witness to the fact which has been taught in all subsequent ages, namely, that with proper instruction and by our own patience and industry, we can regain that which is lost. Remember, we are taught that in due time we shall be entitled to a system, to be installed in the chair of the king. Means, in its true sense, the reattainment of that wisdom we have lost, and the revival in ourselves of the divine life essence, which is the basis of our being. This brings us to the consideration of the most important matter. How can we regain the genuine secrets? In order to answer this, we must obviously solve the problem of the burial place of the principal architect. According to the legend, we are informed that the wisdom of the Most High, personified by King Solomon, ordered him to be interred in a grave from the center, 3 feet between, east and west, and 5 or more feet perpendicular. Where, brethren, do you imagine that grave to be? Probably, you have never thought of the matter as other than at ordinary burial place outside the walls of a geographical Jerusalem. But the real grave of Hiram is in ourselves. Deep at the center of ourselves lies buried the quote-unquote vital and important principle that affiliates us to the divine center of all life. And this is never wholly extinguished, however imperfect our lives may be. The lost guiding light is buried at the center of ourselves. High as your hand may reach upwards or downwards from the center of your own body, 3 feet between, north and south, as far as your hand can reach to the right or left from the middle of your person, 3 feet between east and west, and 5 feet or more perpendicular, the height of a human body, these are the indications by which our cryptic ritual describes the tomb of the builder at the center of ourselves. Freemasonry, then, is a system of philosophy, inasmuch that it provides us with a doctrine of the universe and our place in it. It indicates whence we are come and whither we may return. Its first purpose is to show that man has fallen away from a high estate of the externalized condition in which we now live, but its great virtue lies in the fact that, to those who seek it, indicates the way by which the center may be found within ourselves. And the outline of this teaching is embodied in the discipline and ordeals brought to the notice of the candidate in the 3 degrees. The instruction of these degrees is veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols to emphasize that all great symbols are shadowed forth in the person of man himself. Thus the human organism is the true law that must be opened and wherein the mysteries are to be found. Thus, it is that our lodge rooms are so furnished to typify the human organism. The lower and physical part of us, the earthly, rests like Jacob's ladder upon the earth, whilst our higher portion is spiritual and reaches to the heavens. These two portions are in perpetual conflict, and he alone is a wise man who has learned to effect a perfect balance between them and to establish himself in strength so that his own inward house stands firm against all weakness and temptation. The world at large is, as it were, but one great lodge, of which our Masonic lodges are the little mirrors. Mother Earth is also the mother lodge of us all. As its vast work goes on, souls are ever descending into it, and souls are being called out of it in the knocks of some great unseen warden of life and death, who calls them from labor here and summons them hence for refreshment. Hence it is that, after the work in the lodge, the festive board, after the labor of this world, the repast and refreshment of the heavenly places. In submitting these thoughts to you, I would once again stress the fact that the real aim of Freemasonry is to provide us with a course of self-knowledge and self-discipline by means of which we may accelerate our return to our real home, which in the volume of the Sacred Law is known as the Kingdom of Heaven. The candidate in the Entered Apprentice degree is informed that our system is one containing secrets, but he is also reminded that those secrets are not communicated indiscriminately. This is indeed true, for they exist concealed beneath a great reservation and are disclosed only to those of us who are prepared to act upon the hint given in the instruction lectures, "Seek and ye shall find, ask and ye shall receive, knock and it shall be opened unto you." The search may be long and difficult, but great things are not to be acquired without effort, and it may be affirmed that to the candidate who is properly prepared, there are doors leading from the craft that, when knocked, will assuredly open and admit him to places and knowledge of which he, at present, knows little. And now, my brethren, this brings me to the conclusion of my paper and our study of the mystical quest in Freemasonry. And I trust that the small contribution I have been privileged to place here before you will prove to be a glimmering ray in the restoration of that light which we have declared is the predominant wish of our hearts. It rests with each one of us whether Masonry remains merely a series of symbolic rites or whether we allow those symbols to pass into our lives and become realities. Our craft was given out to the popular world from obscure and secret sources as a great experiment in means of grace. The knowledge concealed by the allegory and illustrated by symbols is only taught in certain carefully concealed sanctuaries, and its presentation in craft lodges is intended to lead those capable of discerning its true purpose into still deeper initiations. Finally, brethren, in accordance with the general design of our system, the worshipful master of a craft lodge is the humble representative of King Solomon, who himself is a symbol. And beyond these and all the grand officers stand the Grand Master of all true Freemasons throughout the universe, the Master of the Great Lodge, to whom we all owe allegiance and to whose protection and enlightening guidance I commend myself and you all. So mote it be. All right, a really great article here that I think revealed some interesting esoteric thoughts, particularly about the tomb of the builder and these kinds of ideas, which are popular among the esoteric realms. I commend the author on his or her poetic nature as they were describing things throughout the paper. Very poetic, very early 20th century in the writing, which this kind of verbose style is kind of a rarity in today's world, which was certainly appreciated. I'll have a link back to the paper to check it out. Maybe you can print it or read it at your next lodge meeting. We'll put that in the show notes. My thanks goes out to Universal Co-Masonry for their work on their universalfreemasonry.org website. It is quite the resource for Freemasonry. And of course, it's Kindred Sciences. That's it for this week. I want to thank you once more for coming along with us. If you have thoughts on this paper, please feel free to join the conversation in the Facebook group, The Craftsman Plus. I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners. If you're curious on how to support this show and bring this Masonic education to millions around the world, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your options. That's it for this week. Once more, thank you all so much for allowing me to bring this education to you. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your...